Blog Talk Radio.
Either. I encourage every American to read about this health care plan and to stand up and force Congress to put on the brakes and listen to us, something they have not done for a long, long time. With this webpage that introduces this book to America, there is a link for Americans to sign up to participate in a grassroots movement to force Congress to take the same health care they are pushing on the rest of us. Now, in French antiquity, there's an old fable that tells the story of a princess. Whereupon, being told that the peasants have no bread, she said, "Well, then let them eat cake." Well, where would they get the cake if they didn't even have bread? This story parallels the hubris of our own government officials. They have purposely exempted themselves from our health care plan. Now, this smacks of the old Russian Politburo. The government sets themselves up with a Cadillac health care plan while the rest of us suffer with an envelope that has health care written on the outside, and there's virtually nothing on the inside. Now, I propose that we set up a national referendum that the people of America vote on to force Congress to use the same health care they provide for us. The people of America have basically forgotten that America is a democracy first and a representative republic second. The Constitution leaves the people a safety valve to put the brakes on a runaway government, and I intend to initiate that very safety valve. Through referendum, we can force Congress to forfeit their Cadillac plan and take the same one they give us. Better yet, perhaps we should force them onto Medicare. This referendum can be written in a way that Congress cannot overturn it and the courts cannot review it. This will take a lot of work and dedication, but this is not an unknown enterprise to the American people. Now, I'm building an army in this war on medicine, and I intend to make sure that Americans get the very best health care that we can and stop this madness at the... Hello. My name is Dr. Michael Price. I'm a practicing surgeon from Ohio. I am also the author of Anathema, America's War on Medicine. For those of you who have never encountered the word anathema, the dictionary defines it as a person or thing that is detested or loathed, such as that subject is anathema to him. It means something that is held in abomination. In modern day vernacular, it simply refers to an outrage. I could not think of a more appropriate term for the book than Anathema, America's War on Medicine. I wrote this book to try to educate the American people about how the best healthcare system in the world has been nearly destroyed by various forces, including the American government, insurance companies, lawyers, doctors, and yes, even the American public themselves.
The top of the hour now. While Congress wrangles over how to pass health care reform, our next guest says, guess what? He has a better idea.
So let's hear from Dr. Michael Price. He's the author of Anathema, America's War on Medicine, and he joins us to talk about his three-step plan to improve health care.
Good morning.
Wait a minute. On Capitol Hill, they got about a 700,000-page plan floating around. You got three steps?
Absolutely. The government's out of control. And this is a health care plan that was actually written by a doctor, not a politician. Mm-hmm. And it addresses the problems that really exist rather than what they want you to believe.
Oh, how practical of you.
So your number one step is to get rid of repetitive medicine. I guess what you mean by that is if you go to one doctor and then you change doctors, to be able to bring everything along with you so they don't do the same stuff over.
If you repeat things over and over and over and over again, there's a huge cost associated with that. And by creating a common digital uniform medical record, we can eliminate that.
Also, it goes hand in hand because a lot of doctors practice defensive medicine with the repetition. Handle the liability. It seems like the whole tort reform thing was taken off the table awfully early.
Well, I don't believe in tort reform. I'd like to eliminate it. It's really only as good as who sits on the court. It's been overturned three times in Ohio. So with this book, I've completely rewritten how we handle liability. It's a whole new plan, and it really solves the problem.
Well, just give us an idea, because a lot of people are saying that's one of the reasons, that's one of the escalators in the cost.
Well, it starts out by the doctors having to write standards of care. We don't have any written standards of care now, so that opens up doors in the courtroom for malpractice. So what the doctors do is they write standards of care, excuse me, and then if they follow those standards of care and stay within that guideline and something goes wrong, then it's not malpractice.
Sure.
It becomes a complication or an adverse outcome. And then you develop a whole new system of compensation for the patient if they have an adverse outcome.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the year, the doctors go back into conference and they look at all the standards and see which one works, where the adverse outcome is, and they try then to change the standard of care to make things better.
That's a good idea.
All right, step number three, everybody on the same plan. What do you mean by that?
Well, essentially what we want to do is we want to bring everybody, including entitlements, onto the same plan. That gives us a 300 million person actuary table. And if you talk to any insurance people, they'll tell you the best way to cut costs is to get everybody on the plan. And so we do this by creating a new system of health care whereby we get rid of all these small insurance companies and we bring in a bidding process. The government will then initiate a bidding process similar to what we do with an aircraft carrier or something.
Sure.
And only three companies will be allowed to do that. And so then they have to compete against each other for 300 million policies. They don't get to set prices, and their prices are actually capped. So we have a 0 to 7% buffer there. If they go above 7%, we lower costs. We lower their premiums. If we go below that, you spread the cost over 300 million people.
I'm sorry, you've made it way too easy.
Yeah. And by the way, thank you for sending me the old-fashioned doctor's bag. This is a blast from the past, and I appreciate it.
Well,
thanks very much, Dr. Michael Price. I know it took you a long time to get to New York, but we appreciate you being on the show today.
Thank you very much.
Job well done.
Coming up on the show.
Trying to sell your old car? Instead, donate your vehicle to Heritage for the Blind. Pickup is free and your donation is tax deductible. Just call 1-800-956-0327. Heritage for the Blind accepts cars, vans, trucks, and boats, whether they run or not. Donate your vehicle and you'll receive a free 3-day vacation voucher to over 50 locations. Call 1-800-956-0327. That's 1-800-956-0327.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody.
Sometimes the feeling is right. You fall in love for the first time. Heartbeat and kisses so sweet. Summertime love in the moonlight.
I've been missing you. I want you by my side. And I hope you'll miss me too.
Come back and stay.
I'll think about your every day. Joining us on this very special Monday, the 13th of June, already. The Price is Right. A special thank you to C. Robert Jones for allowing me to steal his airtime today and for his show. We're about to bring on some people. Michael Price should be joining us about quarter after the hour. Mike Price for U.S. Senate in Ohio. This very active Republican wants to go back to grassroots GOP policy and strong leadership. He said, quote, "The common denominator in our country's demise is the wild, uncontrolled spending by both parties." Amen to that. We need to sever the cord between CEOs and politicians. We cannot continue to leave the working man out into the cold while CEOs run away with millions of taxpayer dollars. If you check the description box, I do have a link to Mike Price's website. He is a very serious and very viable candidate as in the Republican Party. He is an author as well as a physician. Tonight on a C. Robert Jones Report, Mike Price joins us in a cast of characters in a roundtable. Craig Shaw will be joining us from Toledo. Hopefully Doc Weiss out of the Cleveland area. Tesler stepping in for GGT. He has a family emergency, and please keep him and his family in your prayers. What exactly is going on, I'll leave that for him, but whether we agree or disagree, everybody needs our prayers. And today we take your questions. We will take some calls possibly too. And tonight, the price is right. Anyway, with that being said and done, let's see. Area code 202. Who do I have here? Area code 202. Oh, now you got to go back on hold. Skype caller, 200.
That might be me. This is Craig.
Hey, Craig. Well, welcome aboard. Craig.
Good to be here.
Correct. You are from the Toledo area, correct?
Yeah, I'm about 40 miles south. It's Tiffin, Ohio.
Okay.
So, near Finley.
Okay.
Big city.
Okay, Doc Jones, we'll get you next. Craig? Why don't you introduce yourself to Jock Jones's crowd, as we obviously have a packed house already in the chat room. Introduce yourself, tell people a little bit about your show and, your nature of business.
Yeah, I do a show called We Are America. We've got a few shows compiled under the We Are America United, Wahoo Network. It includes Insane Government, Conservative Prime Time, which is Mike and Jermaine's show, Blues Prime Time Music Show on Saturdays, my show, We Are America, which just came back on Saturdays at 9 p.m. Eastern, and Victor Mikulovsky does a show called Insane Government. I co-host that with him every now and then. We actually just got done interviewing Reza Khali, who was a former Iranian Revolutionary Guard CIA operative. And very interesting insight. We just got done interviewing him for the second time, actually. It's just a good show, and we just want to promote conservative political points of view and just to get everybody talking about it and hopefully put some pressure on our elected individuals, such as Mike Price, giving us the ability to question him. So.
Oh, great. Dr. Jones, your mic is open. And,
all right.
thank you, Dr. Jones. I appreciate you letting me letting me use your show again. I know a couple of weeks ago you let us use it for the First Amendment topic,
yeah.
But I really appreciate it. When I was arranging this with George, Mr. Price's kind of left-hand man,
mm-hmm. left-hand man.
I suggested they come on at 11:30, and he was like, "What?" He goes,
oh.
"The two of us are looking to be up after dinner." So,
yeah, me too.
But oh, Doc, please, you better get a lot of coffee in you today. But we're expecting, hopefully, Doc White will be here. I hadn't had a chance to catch up with anyone, but hopefully they will be, and hopefully Mr. Price will join us about quarter after the hour or shortly around that. What we're going to do is Tesla is also going to join us in place of GDT.
Mm-hmm.
What we're going to do is once Mr. Price gets on, we're going to do a little introduction. Then we're going to give him, a minute or two to give an opening statement. With that said, we always, it's tradition for me when I do something along these lines to give Tesla the first question. Then we'll just go around and ask these questions concerning us. Post the questions
mm-hmm.
in the chat room if we can get to it. And I have a I submitted my questions to him in advance. The reason I did that, a couple of them are going to require research because I asked him about specific medication. I thought he was a medical doctor, as in a pediatric, but he is
mm-hmm.
not. He is an orthopedic doctor. So I sent a. I'm really concerned about this drug that they have that helps you quit smoking. The side
yeah.
effects are suicide, liver and brain damage. Peeling skin, and I'm thinking, how in the world does a drug like this even get on the market?
Mm-hmm.
And I posed a question to Fred Carter, who is running for president. Well, the response to that is another time. Ladies and gentlemen, I think I see Tesla out there. Tesla, is that you?
It certainly is, Mike. How are you doing tonight?
Okay. I'm doing good. Thanks for filling in. Now, Tesla, give this guy at least a couple of minutes before you chase him off.
Hold on, I'm not done answering it. I'll do my best, but it does appear that he seems to have a more favorable position that I'm more comfortable with. So I may not be inclined towards chasing him off. You did ask me at the last minute, so I haven't been able to do a lot of research on this guy, but I'll do my best. I promise.
Okay. Doc Jones?
Yeah, I assume that the candidate Michael Price is a medical doctor as well. He is not. Is that correct?
Well, he is not a arms and limbs. What is that called?
Surgeon.
He's an orthopedic
okay.
surgeon.
All right. Okay.
I was under the impression he was a pediatrician. I had heard him. He's a very well-spoken person. He has very little love for the current administration, and he puts it in very unpolite terms at times. But
right.
I wrote him, and this was about a month ago. We finally were able to come to a certain date. And I'm really, really excited because, number one, is I think he's the first real candidate running for an office that I have booked.
Really?
Well, first guy had Tesla took care of in 60 seconds. He hung up on him. When they got in, the second guy called back. But either way, and one great thing about Mike Price, he's from a military family. And when I got to talk to him on Van the Radio Man show, he wasn't afraid to challenge me on an issue when I challenged him on the Patriot Act. And he pointed out certain things, and I like that. I get
mm-hmm.
tired of these politically correct candidates that will tell Dr. Jones one thing, Craig Shaw another, and then Tesla another, to appease all three. That's not going to happen.
Well, great.
Anyway, let's see. I thought we had a caller in. Let's see. All right. Nope. Craig Shaw, I got your message. No, that's me, not Dr. Jones. Anyway, Dr. Jones.
Okay.
All right,
I got it straight now.
Okay. Dr. Jones, do you have an opening statement or anything while we just kill the time. Oh, hi, it's Antoinette, too. Well, we kill the
yeah,
time Antoinette, and wait for.
Well, yeah, I am.
How long will
really
you be joining us for?
Me?
Dr.
Jones has been doing
Price.
This stuff long. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Craig. Ask
so I said, how long will Dr. Price be joining us?
We hope for an hour. right okay. around there, a
Great.
Minimum of 10
Great.
O'clock, depending on what time he calls.
Okay.
I did not, as I said, I didn't actually get a number from him in advance. Normally I do that, but we've been exchanging the emails quite a bit. He did write me, and that's when he said, what prescription were you talking about? And then he told me he is an orthopedic surgeon. So that's when I sent him the question. And I'm definitely going to ask him what he thinks about Jim Tressel. For those who don't know, Jim Tressel is one of the best coaches in college football who's under a huge scandal for paying off players. He recently resigned. That's kind of, even those who don't follow football, it's probably the equivalent of a very good coach, not quite a Vince Lombardi, but an extremely successful coach. Tessler, how about you? Opening statement or anything you care to add before while we kill time? I keep staring at this monitor thinking, Carl, come on, hurry.
Well, no, not really. Like I said, you call me on short notice. I'll do my best to ask the first question. Ohio's a great state. I've been there a few times myself. And with the Republican governor you've got up there, hopefully that will help turn the tide in the presidential elections in 2012 and turn that electoral rich state to the Republican column come 2012.
Hear, hear. Indeed, I couldn't agree more. I'm looking forward to it. And you know what, Mike, you put such great shows together when you have these guests on, be they real candidates or imagined. The shows are always great. They're always entertaining, and I'm just really pleased that you chose my show to feature this candidate. Thank you so much. I really do appreciate it.
Oh, Doc, the thanks is to you. And Tessler, before I think we might have. We either got Doc or all these Ohio people on. We either have Mr. Price on or Doc. But before I do that, Tessler, somebody pointed out in the chat room that your show yesterday was very demeaning to Mrs. Obama, the First Lady, referring that she had a large booty. Oh, boy.
Really?
Tessler
well,
becoming
Mike,
like the rebel.
Mike, do you know why I call Mrs. Obama a lobster? Do you
no.
know why?
Why?
Okay. Well, I call her lobster for three reasons. Number one, like a communist, a lobster is red. Number two, she always has her claws out.
Ooh.
And number three, like any lobster, all the meat is in the rear.
Ooh.
Oh, boy.
Ouch.
All right, with that said, area code 303. Welcome. Area code 303. Hello?
Hello?
330?
Yep, this is 330.
Yes. Who do we have here?
This is Dr. Price.
Hello, Dr. Price. Thank you. This is cool, Mike. Thank you so much, Dr. Price, for giving us this time. We were just kind of doing intros. And why don't you hold on? And I prepared a special intro for tonight's show.
Okay.
Dr. Price, you're going to enjoy this. If you even, when you make it to the big D.C., you're going to be thinking of this intro, because this is the best intro ever.
Oh, I hope so.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, friends and fans alike, Democrats, Republicans, and Independents, respectively. It's finally here, the C. Robert Jones Conservative Report, with our special guest author, doctor, and Republican for U.S. Senate, Michael Price. Doc Weiss of the Conservative Underground and resident of Cleveland, Ohio area, come on down. Craig Shawl of BTR's We Are America, Wahoo Media, resident of Toledo, Ohio, come on down. Tessler of Socialism is Not an Option, come on down. And Dr. C. Robert Jones, retired Marine and host of tonight's program, come on down. You are the panel selected tonight for The Price is Right. And now here's the star of tonight's show, Republican, physician, and author, candidate for U.S. Senate in the Buckeye State of Ohio, Michael Price.
Well, welcome, Mr. Price. How do you like that intro?
It's
think it's great. It's still going on. There we go.
Yeah, I killed it. Well, thank you. Mike, thank you so much. I don't know if you remember me, but I got to know you on Dan the Radio Man show, and I really enjoyed what you had to say, even in disagreement. I was commenting before you called. I like a candidate who will tell it like it is. You weren't there to appease anybody. And,
that's correct.
You know, I have my state representative. He'll go to every house on the block and tell everybody different stories. Everybody thinks he goes to their church. But thank you again for coming. Why don't I give you a minute or two to give a little opening statement, tell people about yourself before we begin.
All right. First of all, I've not ever held a public office before, but I got into high-level politics because of what's happening at the federal level. I authored a book about health care, and several months ago when President Obama was speaking to Congress, he says, if you have any new ideas, send it to me. So I sent it to him, and I sent him a letter once a week for 11 weeks, and he never looked at the book. We said, did you look at my book? Did you read my book? And so forth. And then they pounded through this health care law with a non-parliamentary procedure that I just said, I'm in the fight now. I just can't stay out of it. The book has carried me to national prominence. I've been on Fox and Friends in the Fox Strategy Room and NBC News and several, probably 25 syndicated radio programs. And we just heard the other day that a major Tea Party, and I won't say which one yet because the deal hasn't been made, but they want to take over the production of my book, and they want to sell it to across the country to Tea Party people because the person that's in charge of doing this said that they think that this is probably the health care plan that can overturn Obamacare. And we've heard that before. One radio talk show host said once upon a time that he said he thinks this is the Bible for health care reform. So a little bit about myself. I'm a practicing orthopedic surgeon. I've been married for 32 years. I have two lovely daughters that are both living in New York City and both employed. One's in law school and the other one's in fine dining. And I'm a small businessman. I'm a patent holder. I'm a author, and I'm a Second Amendment guy. I belong to the NRA, and so I'm all the things that doctors really aren't supposed to be, especially in politics, because I think now is the time that a doctor really needs to get engaged. The next big election we have in 2012 is going to be all about jobs and health care. And I believe I'm the best candidate in Ohio right now to help our government get through those issues.
Well, Dr. Price, I'm going to be biased right off the bat and say I happen to agree. I've since meeting you, I've studied all the candidates. I've also I like what you have to say. And as I said, you don't fit the mold. Criticizing other Republicans, criticizing other positions, wow. And you have the betterment of the people in mind. And that's we just don't see that in too many candidates. Let me give you a quick view of who we have. We're hoping Doc will call. Doc's from the Cleveland area. But we have Craig Shaw. He hosts a show on BTR called We Are America. He's in the Toledo area. Tesler, who hosts a show on BTR called Socialism is Not an Option. Wait a minute. Let me reframe it. Tesler, who hosts the best shows on BTR, Socialism is Not an Option. And then C. Robert Jones, whose show you're calling into today, is a retired Marine of 30 years, a very, very good friend, and he also hosts the Conservative Report. He's a graduate of William and Mary as well, during the time when Lou Holtz was around. So, all right, Mr. Price, with that said and done, again, thank you for being here. We'll let Tesler throw the first question at you. Those who have questions, please post them in the chat room, and I'll throw them at Dr. Price if we have time. But he is on limited time, so go ahead, Tesler. Tesler? Yeah. Tesla, are you there? Hang on a second. All right. Oh, sorry about that. No, that's me bad, Doc. I muted the mics.
Okay.
So
can you hear me now?
Tesla, we can hear you. Doc, I gotta give you a fair warning. Tesla always chases my guests out early, so here we go. But all of
no, guys, no, no. I've done no such thing. Now,
okay, Tesla, go ahead.
Dr. Price, it's a pleasure meeting you. Thank you very much for being a guest on this show.
Thank you.
You know, and I've seen that you've got a great governor there in Kasich. Very, very good governor, although he should decide whether or not he's going to take that pay cut, don't you think?
He's going to take the what, sir?
The pay cut all that the state employees are supposed to take.
Yeah, I understand.
Apparently that's in Ohio.
That's a big political move that a lot of people do from time to time, and I suppose if he said he's going to take it, he should do it.
Well, you're exactly right. Dr. Price, I noticed, you know, I was called in at the last minute, but I noticed on your website, on your immigration policy, you indicated that both Cuban refugees and Haitian refugees have a policy that's applied to them by the United States, called, you know, both feet on dry land, the wet foot, dry foot policy. But
right.
To my understanding, sir, that policy does not apply to Haitians. Now, I looked it up, and the policy statement is issued as early as last month. There's no policy that applies to Haitians that way, only to Cubans. And that policy being, of course, that both feet are planted on the soil in America. They're granted an asylum. I don't know where you got that issue that Haitians are also beneficiaries of that policy, because I posted the link to that policy from the government in the chat room, and I would respectfully request that you review that policy again. I don't think Haitians apply.
Okay. I was fortunate enough to be drawn into the FBI Citizens Academy. And during the time that we were studying about the FBI, that came up. And we were led to believe that it was Haitians and Cubans. And if I'm wrong, then certainly then we even have a different setup for immigration. But the point is that they do not make the laws equal for everybody. They don't enforce them equally, and one person can walk across the border and another person can't.
Okay. Let me ask you this question, which is really the second part of my question.
Can I ask a question first? Does he have his radio turned up or something? Because there's an echo in there that's cutting off, it's clipping his signal there.
I'm not sure. I did text him. Hang on. Tesla, if you'll jump on that, let's go to Dr. Jones, and then we'll go right back to you a second, Tesla. But it was killing, actually, my ears. Let's see, Doc Jones. Okay.
I'm here.
All righty. Go ahead, Doc Jones. Your question for U.S. Senator candidate Michael Price.
Dr. Price, you are a man of my own heart, a military man, a pilot. I am both, and I do appreciate your service, and I appreciate what you're doing here. What do you think your chances are of in this upcoming election of 2012, and what are some of the first things that you'll do once you are a member of the United States Senate? What are some of the first things that are on your agenda? As a newly minted,
the first thing is that I ran in the last election as an independent because I didn't have time to get into the Republican primary, and I wanted a chance to get my views out in front of the public. So I filed as an independent, and I had to get five times as many signatures. And then I went out, and I've been campaigning since last year at this time. And so my chances of winning this election, I think, are growing every day. I've made a lot of friends in the Tea Party in Ohio, and we started to make a lot of friends in the Republican Party because of my views are hitting home. And I think I have as good a chance as any, and I really think that as the election goes on, you're going to find out some things about some of the other candidates that aren't going to be too complimentary to them because some of the things they've done since they've been in office. And I think that one of the reasons why I think people are going to pay attention to us is when I started my campaign, I developed a philosophy. And we've heard so much from President Obama and the Democrats that they say that we need a fundamental change in America. And I don't think we need a fundamental change in America. I think we need a fundamental change in the people that we sent to Washington, D.C. And that's what we put on the back of our little business card, and it's on our website, and it's on all the campaign literature that we're sending out, because that's really where we are. The professional politicians have proven time and time and time again that they're just not getting the job done. They go down to Washington and they get in that atmosphere and they tend to get into the habit of serving themselves and not the people that put them there. So I'm all about representing the people of my state. Now, the first thing that I want to see happen is that, you know, as a physician, and I think I heard that there was another doctor on here tonight, as an operating surgeon, we have students come in the operating room occasionally, and when that's probably their first time that they've ever seen the real thing, and there's lots of blood, so they get a little upset about it, so we kind of kid them with a little tongue-in-cheek saying that we say, well, you know, a surgeon's motto is that sooner or later all bleeding stops. Well, the biggest thing that, you know, there's a little bit of wisdom in that as well, because you can apply that to spending, and when you say, if we don't stop spending, pretty soon spending is going to stop itself. So the first thing that I want to do is I want to attack this out-of-control spending. If we don't control spending, this country is simply going to sink into oblivion. That's the first thing that I would do. I would go after that in a big way. I have an idea that one of the things that we can do is, and I find that there's only two areas of the Constitution that I think are a little bit weak, and this is one of them. But I think that in order to the Congress is not going to give this up easily. So my intention would be to introduce a constitutional amendment that says that no bill can be signed into law that has any kind of an amendment, an earmark, an adjustment, an alteration of any kind that doesn't have something to do with the original intent of the law. And once that's in place, if they don't stop spending, then the second part of that would kick in that says that if it's going to be federal money, it has to involve at least three states, except under extenuating circumstances like Katrina or those tornadoes or a volcano or an earthquake or something like that. But three states have to be involved in order for federal money to be doled out. Number one, that's going to stop the EKG of a fruit fly. It's going to stop the what was that thing they did with that little shrimp that was on a treadmill and so forth. And what happens then is that 47 other states have to look at this federal money as it goes out through their representatives, and they can sit there and say, you know, I don't want my money to go to a Louisiana purchase where the governor said that she wasn't going to vote for the health bill because she had four things that she had great questions about, and 10 hours later and $300 million of everybody's tax money, suddenly she liked the health care bill. Now, that's how this stuff gets started, and that's the easiest way that I see to make it stop. You just take it away from the Congress and say, you're going to do things the way we want you to do them, and that's the first thing, is we're going to just curtail the crazy spending. And then once that gets under control, then they can start to apply their usefulness to other things in the government.
All righty. Well, thank you for answering that. Next up is Craig Shaw, who is a resident of the Toledo area. So he's right in your backyard there. Greg, are you with us?
Yes, it's a pleasure, Dr. Price, and I appreciate you giving us your time today. I have a sort of a two-part question. The first would be, do you think that there has been would you agree or disagree that there's a total disconnect between the federal government representatives, i.e. our senators and our U.S. Congress representatives, and the state legislators? And if so, what do you think that you and your counterpart, if selected, could do along with your U.S. representatives to sort of make sure that all of the individuals representing Ohio are working with the Ohio State Legislature?
Well, there's a very good example of that, that we talk about how we have to stop spending and how jobs are one of the most important things that we're going to be doing in the next election. And I have said for a long time now that if the country does what I think they should do in the way of taxes and spending and so forth, and they get the economy turned around, that Ohio is going to play last fiddle, because they have two things in the way that are preventing jobs from getting started in Ohio. And number one
it's these incredible high health care benefits that people have to pay, the premiums they have to pay in Ohio. When these insurance companies, if you read my book, you'll understand where all this came from. There was an incredible collusion between insurance companies that the federal government just ignored. And the and that when they decided to come up with this health care plan, it's a business plan that all of them adopted. And if you notice, that none of them have a different business plan than any of the others, so it's all put together in back rooms and so forth, which is entirely against the law. It's antitrust and everything else. And they brought this plan to Ohio, particularly because there's an old saying that if you have a product, we want to sell it in Ohio, because if we can sell it in Ohio, we can sell it anywhere. And they brought it to this state, and they have devastated this state with some of the highest health care bills in the entire country, and with the least amount of service that goes along with it. Now, so that's one thing that has to be dealt with. Number two, we have one of the worst workers' compensation laws ever in the United States. And this was put together actually by one of the people that's running for Congress this year. It was one of the actual authors of that bill. And when that bill went into effect and became law, in the first 3 years, the state of Ohio lost $1.6 billion. And they set this thing up so that there is not only an employer who has four denials of a person's care, and then they have so they have to have an attorney. Then the state, whenever there's a conflict and somebody says that they're filing a claim and the employer's trying to stop it, they say that there's we're going to deny the claim. And so once there's a denial, then the state has to assign a referee. So they hire an attorney to referee the match, and then if the worker's smart, he'll get an attorney as well. So now we've got three attorneys involved in it. And then when this new law went into effect, they came up with these things called managed care organizations, and their purpose is to strangle the health care so that that they save money by not spending any money and denying health care. And the whole purpose of this is that if you can starve a guy long enough, there's about a 70% chance that you can starve a man out of his claim or a woman out of his claim from an injury just by delaying the action on it. And so they set up eight little court trials. So we now have four attorneys involved in it. And if you happen to either do business with the state of Ohio, or you happen to belong to or your employer is the state of Ohio, then the attorney general hires an attorney. And so now we've got five attorneys all sucking the money out of the workman's comp system, and it is incredibly expensive because these things drag on and on and on and on and on, and all these people get paid for all their little trials that they go through, and they get one or two trials away from going into a common pleas court, and then they back off and settle the case. So the workman's comp bills are so high that people in Ohio can't keep their job because people are leaving the state. Now, as far as a federal person who would get along with the state, that's one of the first things that I would look at and say, look, if Ohio's going to survive in this coming climate, we're going to have to get rid of those two things. We're going to have to redo the workers' compensation law, and we're going to have to do something about these runaway costs in Ohio as far as health care. Now, that's one way that the Congress can work together. The other thing that's going to happen is that they put together a pretty good freshman class this last time in 2010, and they're already starting to make some effect in Washington. And I think we should continue that trend and put people in there who are going to cooperate with them and do things that are good for the country. And by this class of freshmen, they have very good relations between the Senate and the Congress and the House representative. And, as you know, because of all the things that went on here in Ohio since Governor Kasich took office, there is a tremendous connect between what's going on in Washington and what's going on in Ohio. I think that the train's already rolling. We just want to get on board.
Oh, great. That was great answers, Doc. Quick, I'm going to ask you a quick, just kind of a quick question before I jump to a little piece. Basically, I took a little part of your video, and I want, so this way the listeners can get to know you a little bit better. I also posted your link. If anyone is in the state of Ohio or around there interested in volunteering, check out his website. My quick question is regarding your family. Do you recycle? Are you a recycling family?
You mean like trash?
Yeah, like recycle.
Oh, yeah.
No,
yeah,
not trash, like paper and plastic.
Okay, I was not sure where you were headed there. Yeah, we do. We have in fact, the place where we live mandatorily has us separated. And so we have a little basket out on the right next to the sink, and when the time comes, I empty a can of Coke or Diet Coke or whatever, it goes right in the basket. And there's plastics and glass and everything goes in there, and all the rest of the trash goes in the other. So we do recycle.
Okay, well, throughout the interview, I'm going to throw kind of just a little get-to-know Mike Price. By the way, my friend just messaged me. I have a picture of you in our description box. I don't know if you got to see it. There's a picture of you and your wife.
Yeah,
he wants me to
looking.
Tell you your wife has it going on. It's in our description. I'll send you the link. But I sent it with you in my last email. He said your wife has it going on, so I think that means that she's very beautiful. Here's Dr. Price from his video, and which was incredibly informational. In the second half, we'll play some. But here's just a brief introduction about Dr. Price.
Hello, my name is Dr. Michael Price. I'm a practicing surgeon from Ohio. I am also the author of Anathema, America's War on Medicine. For those of you who have never encountered the word anathema, the dictionary defines it as a person or thing that is detested or loathed, such as that subject is anathema to him. It means something that is held in abomination. In modern-day vernacular, it simply refers to an outrage. I could not think of a more appropriate term for the book than Anathema, America's War on Medicine. I wrote this book to try to educate the American people about how the best healthcare system in the world has been nearly destroyed by various forces, including the American government, insurance companies, lawyers, doctors, and yes, even the American public themselves.
All righty. Well, that's just a brief intro. Well, let's jump back to Tesler. Tesler, hopefully that mic is fixed. Go ahead. You're next.
Yeah, let me know. How are you sounding right now? Because I did not call on Skype. Is it sounding okay?
No, it's still echoing. It's still echoing, Tesler.
Because that's what I said. I'm calling off the usual cell phone that I call.
Go ahead, throw the question out if you can, and let's see. All let's right. see if we can respond.
All right.
No, Tesla, you're not coming in at all. I don't even think he heard you on that.
Okay. I'm going to switch phones and see if that works.
Okay. All right. Tesla's going to switch phones. Sorry about that. Dr. Price, my question for you is, should the universal health care or this health care that you're about to introduce, and we'll talk about more of that in the second half of the show, should it include dental and orthodontal work? I know in a lot of these care plans, dentistry and orthopedic work on as far as braces, et cetera, are separate.
Well, frankly, the healthcare plan is it can be universal. It's not a mandatory program, but what it does is that it offers people an affordable healthcare plan that is put together and is run actually by the physicians themselves. Now, as far as whether or not dental or orthodontics should be involved in that, I think that that can be an option, and you can certainly purchase that if you want to. But I think that has to come down to when the thing is actually organized. That I think that'll have to be decided at that time. Myself, I don't have any particular worries one way or the other about it. It certainly, the healthcare plan is so cheap that we certainly could afford it. There's no doubt about that. So to me, it would be something that could be on the table.
And I will. We will play you your interview with Fox and Friends coming up shortly. I thought that was great. You really broke it down. One of the things I said prior to the show, or prior to you calling in, I liked how I think a lot of times these people who are running for office like to use words to words. When they're done, you're staring thinking, what in the hell did they just talk about? I think you broke it down in very easy terms, including, if I'm not mistaken, the moderator said to you, he goes, you made that way too simple. If I'm not mistaken, he said something along those lines.
That's exactly what he said.
Yeah, and Dr. Jones, next question for Dr. Michael Price.
Dr. Price, the outline in your book, I do not have a copy of the book. I ordered it on Amazon a couple of days ago. It's not here yet. However, I do have some excerpts and then from the book, and I'd like to ask a couple of questions about it. In your book, you lay out a lot of scenarios where healthcare can be made to be affordable for everyone, but it sounds so very simplistic, such to the extent that it just sounds too good to be true. total healthcare in the past was and still can be affordable, but it can only be a reality if it's controlled by those who put healthcare first and profit last. Is that realistic?
Well,
do you think?
Let's put it this way: that if this country is going to survive, it's going to have to be realistic. This is not something that we can play around with anymore. Healthcare is dragging this country down very similarly to what happened to Great Britain, and the reason why it's being dragged down is because there are too many people who don't belong in the pot, and when you get what I call the economic saprophytes out of the formula, healthcare becomes very affordable. There's a couple other things that have to be done, is that we have to come up with a new way to handle liability. Liability is the big ticket item in everything, whether it's Medicare, Medicaid, private health insurance, the government insurance. Liability is what's driving a lot of these really high costs. And if you'll recognize, not one of the people in Congress, not the president, not anybody that's come up with any kind of a healthcare direction in this country has done anything to solve that problem. And I have completely reformed how liability is handled in this healthcare plan. And the most important thing is that it does not interfere with anybody's constitutional right to sue. I'm a doctor, and I'm probably the only doctor in America that's going to sit here in public and tell you that I don't think tort reform belongs in healthcare. Tort reform is an imposition on people's constitutional right to sue, and I don't want to see that get started, because once you take a whack at it somewhere, then it starts happening. They start tearing the whole thing apart sooner or later. We have no constitution. And the reason why I wrote an op-ed for the Wall Street Journal, which they didn't publish, but it talked about tort reform being a poison pill or the miracle cure. And it really is not a miracle cure for healthcare problems. In Ohio, we have tort reform. And the man from Toledo, I'm quite sure, will tell you that we have tort reform in Ohio. But I use an example of a cardiologist, a friend of mine, who read my book and said, "Boy, you really have this liability thing nailed." And he said his own neighbor called him one night, and he said, "I just went out to the hospital because I couldn't get an appointment with my family doctor." It took him 3 months to get in to see him, and he had a headache for 3 days, and he thought something serious was wrong, so he went out to the emergency room, and he came home with an $18,000 bill just for a headache.
Dang.
And so he called the cardiology friend of mine, and he says, "What kind of a racket are you people running out there?" And then he said, "Well, let me get the emergency room fellow on the phone." And, well, it turns out they literally did everything they possibly could. They drew all the blood they could. They ran every test they could. They did a CT scan of his head. They did an X-ray of his head. They did an MRI of his head and his chest. They did all the cardiac tests, and then they tapped his spine. And then when they said, well, when nothing came up, then they gave him some medicine to go home, and he had an $18,000 bill. So the cardiologist asked the emergency room doctor, "For crying out loud, what are you doing?" And he said, "Look, I've been sued 4 times over headaches, and that's not going to happen to me again." And this was in the face of tort reform. What killed this frivolous lawsuit in Ohio was when the liability insurance companies decided to fight every single case. Because these attorneys would just file a suit. Somebody would go in and say, "I don't like what happened to my arm or my leg or my heart or my, you know, whatever." And they'd file a suit. And they knew that there was no real harm that came to these people, but they were hoping that a lot of doctors just don't like to sit on a on a witness stand and take cross-examination. And myself, I love that kind of thing. So I'm always willing to sit there and banter with them. But the problem is the doctors would just – they would cave in and just settle. So the attorney would get a $10,000 check. He'd take 67 or 57% of it and give the rest to the person who suffered the injury. And they'd walk away with the attorney walk away with $5,000 or $7,000, and that would be the end of it. Well, now the insurance company said we're not putting up with that anymore, and they decided to fight every single claim. So that's really what happened in Ohio, that tort reform doesn't really solve the problem. And I've pretty much proven it with that one example, but I can tell you that it goes on and it goes on and it goes on. And if the day that they take away my ability to protect myself by ordering whatever I need to make sure that that chart is complete and that patient is fully protected from my health care or from the health care that I'm providing for them, that's the day I quit. And the problem is that it is so expensive that we can't continue like this. So I rewrote how we handle it, and it's very cleverly done. It just cuts the cost in medicine by about 60%. And there's an old saying that doctors will say, if you think about it, do it. Because when you don't do it and you think about it, that's when you get burned in malpractice cases. And that's where all of this spending is coming from.
Indeed. Just one follow-up question. Your book outlines a three-step program that would reduce healthcare costs by more than 50%. I don't have the book in front of me, but if all three steps are not too lengthy, could you take me through them, or if they are lengthy, but perhaps just one or two?
Well, the three-step program is number one, we have to have a common digital electronic medical record that is not controlled by the government. It's supposed to be an electronic record that's shared only by healthcare professionals. Number two is the reform in liability, and number three is to eliminate what I call entrepreneurial medicine. And this is all done under standards of care that are written by doctors. The standards of care are this is the basis of the healthcare plan is that 90% of the American population want their healthcare in the hands of their own physician. They don't want it in the hands of a politician or the hands of a government official like the Health and Human Services Secretary is going to be under Obamacare. They want their doctor to take care of them. And so my position is that the doctors write the standards of care. And then they set up an algorithm and a treatment plan for every diagnostic code. And in the initial period, they make it very broad so that every doctor who has his own little way of doing things can get it in there. But the trick to it is that every year the doctors have to go back into a conference to look at these standards. And they look at what I refer to as adverse outcome. And if the adverse outcome, that's where all the payout comes. If the adverse outcome is too high in the type of thing that you're doing, then that gets eliminated. And pretty soon you start narrowing the standard to where we get down to things that absolutely work. And when they absolutely work, three things happen. One, we lower the cost. Two, we lower the liability. And three, we raise the quality. And there is absolutely no other health care plan that does that. And that's what everybody says has to be done, but this does it just because that's the way it works. Every year, we review the standards of care. And we're not just reviewing, like you see these papers in the medical journals where they'll make a statement about how something should be done based on 25 or 100 patients. And this is going to be dealing with 300 million people. Now I caught some flack from some people who said, well, you're just trying to make it mandatory like Obamacare. I said, no. The big thing is that this health care plan will be available. And when you really see how we can cut the cost by dealing with the liability and the electronic record and eliminating the entrepreneurial nature of medicine, we can cut the cost by 60, 70%. And that brings it right down to about $100 a month, which when you extrapolate it, it's about $1,200 a year, and that's pretty close to what it was in 1970 when we were ranked number one in the world, had the best facilities, the best doctors, and the best health care in every category, and it only cost $356 a year. Right now, it's costing us somewhere between $8,000 and $10,000 a year per person. We have the most expensive health care in the world, and we are ranked number 37. Now, that's a 2009 statistic. We're ranked 37th in the World Health Organization, and we are ranked 19 out of 19 industrial countries as far as the quality and access of medical care in this country. We're the richest country in the world. We have the finest trained doctors and the finest facilities, and we can't put them together because too many people have their mitts in the pie.
Well put, Doctor. Tesler, did we get your problem taken care of? That was very well schooled, by the way, Dr. Price. Tesler, you got that mic problem? You're good, Tesler. We can hear you.
Very good. Dr. Price, sorry for that interruption before on immigration policy. I noticed in your website that you don't seem to address, maybe I missed it, you don't seem to address the issue of abortion and right to life. Are you a right to lifer, sir? And if so, do you believe in any exceptions to abortion?
Well, I have a little story that I tell when people ask me that question. And believe it or not, that we don't address it on the website because it's such a fire stick. We like to deal with people on a personal basis when they talk to us about that. And I get asked that question three times as many as all the other questions asked together. Now, I am a physician, and I can tell you that I've had some issues about abortion. It started when I was in medical school. When we were moving from the classroom to the clinical areas where you put on a white coat and go out in the hospital and learn how to put to use what you learned the first 2 years, the different departments were going to send somebody in to discuss what your responsibilities are going to be on the individual services, like in pediatrics or internal medicine or cardiology or whatever, what have you. Well, when it came time for the OBGYN doctor to come in, he came in with an attitude, and you have to understand that back in the 70s, these kids competed to get into medical school, that they were so afraid to do anything that might get them kicked out. And when I went to med school, I was a little older than everybody else because I'm a U.S. veteran and I served my country before I ever even went to college. I joined the Navy right out of high school. I was 17 years old. So when I got there, I'd had a little bit of worldly experience. And this guy walks in, and instead of introducing himself and start talking about our duties on the OBGYN service, this guy stood up there and said, "Who in this room won't help me with an abortion?" So I already had my ideas about that as it was, and I just held my hand up, and my roommate, we were the only two that held that up, held our hands up. And he saw my roommate first, so he says, "Why won't you help me with an abortion?" And he says, "Because I'm a Catholic, and the Catholic doctrine says we don't support abortion, and the Holy Father says that," and so forth. And this guy just laid him out. He goes, "I go to the same church that you do, and that's a bunch of hogwash." And for 10 minutes, he just read him the Riot Act. And then he said, "So?" And my roommate says, I don't care. I can't go against my faith. I'm not going to do it." And so then he turns and he says, "Where's that other guy?" And so I held my hand up, and he says, "Why won't you help me with an abortion?" And I looked the guy right in the eye, and I said, "I won't help you do anything." And the breath went out of the rest of my classmates because they thought I was on a railroad right out of med school right then and there. And then I proceeded to tell him that he didn't have any right to talk to anybody like that. And he was supposed to be down here talking to us about what services were going to be on and so forth and so on. And I said, "Frankly, you're not doing what you're supposed to do, and you're wasting my time." He said, you're supposed to be telling us what we're going to be doing on OBGYN, and all I hear about is abortion. Is that all we do is abortions around here? Because if that's what we're doing, I'm not going to be doing very much." And so he walked out. And I had trouble with him further down into med school. And the second thing that happened is when I graduated from med school. Because of all the Roe versus Wade talk and all of the furor over it at that time, they decided to take the passage out of the Hippocratic Oath that says I won't do an abortion. And when I found that out, I was really dismayed. And so when we took our Hippocratic Oath, I made the... it was a really kind of a magical place, and all the law students and the medical students and the senior students and all the families and everything were in this big chapel. And when it came time for that passage belongs in the Hippocratic Oath, there's a natural break. I said very, very loud so the whole room could hear me. I said, "I won't do an abortion." And
once again, the breath went out of my classmates, but I was the only one in my class to make that statement. That's my take on abortion, and they're very strong feelings, but I can tell you, I've been around long enough to see what happened in the late 60s and early 70s when a desperate person who doesn't want to be pregnant will take such strides to try to eliminate that. That I know that there is, and I've made this statement publicly several times, that there's never, in my mind, a time where an abortion is appropriate, but there are times medically where it's necessary. And that's to be dealt with by the patient or the doctor.
So the bottom
line
is,
that's my take on that subject.
So the bottom line is you are opposed to abortion, period.
Personally, yes.
No. And there may be medical times. What medical times are those that may run contrary to what many anti-abortionists feel? What times are those?
Well, obviously, if someone has been instrumented out in the street and they're bleeding to death, then it comes time that has to happen. Secondly, there's a medical term called a threatened abortion, where it turns into a miscarriage and the person can be bleeding badly, those types of things right there.
How about abortion in terms of incest or rape?
Well, like I say, you're now talking about criminal issues right there, and that's one thing that the court's going to have to deal with. As far as I'm concerned,
I'm asking you that a woman comes to you as a doctor and wants an abortion because she's been raped, or because she's been raped, or she's bearing a child because some member of her family forced her to, or she wanted to. Now, and there's no medical condition whatsoever that should prevent her from having that child. Are you in favor of abortion under those circumstances?
Well, first of all, I'm not going to do it. That's the first of all thing. And whether or not some other doctor chooses to do that, that's of his own ethics. I'm not in favor of myself.
Okay, so you're not in favor of rape or incest abortions?
Well, like I said, that's a criminal issue. And when the criminal issue, I mean, this is, you know, I'll go public about this right here.
A criminal issue.
So I want you to understand one thing, that this is more than just a black and white. The thing that I don't like is when people say, well, I'm a right to life and I'm a right to choose. It's more complicated than that. And that's all I can say, is that these are highly personal things, and the one thing that I have to say that as a U.S. representative in the Senate, that if we were to have a national referendum and the majority of the people in the country said that abortion is going to be allowed, then I can't use my personal views to override the majority.
So you're another Nancy Pelosi and Bill and Biden. What religion are you, sir?
I'm sorry? You said what
religion are you?
I'm a Methodist.
I see.
Is that bad?
I have no more questions for this person. I've learned all I had to learn.
Okay. Craig Shaw, thanks for waiting patiently. Go ahead.
Okay. I wanted to talk about the Patriot Act. And last month, three of the provisions which were set to expire were extended. I wanted to know that if you had been in office during this vote, and if the vote would come up in the future, would you have voted for those three provisions to be extended, or would you have voted against them? If so or if not, why or why not?
Well, number one, that Patriot Act has been declared unconstitutional, and the Congress has kind of gone around that. And we're in very dangerous times right now. Now, I have to admit that my background is in naval intelligence, and so I've had the opportunity to see some things that go on that I was key to exposing and uncovering. Let's put it that way. Now, based on what I understand from the Patriot Act, that they still have to get a warrant from a judge and so forth and so on, and then the type of people that they are supposed to be investigating are not average citizens. Now, I was on a radio show the other day where a military officer explained to me that I think the man's name was Hayden. I think he was in charge of the one of those intelligence agencies, and they actually admitted to spying on telephone calls on soldiers that were calling home from the Middle East. Now, that to me is a violation of a constitutional right. And when people go that far and go outside the law like that, then they need to be punished. That I don't agree with at all. But the other thing is that I've had lots of people tell me that they think this is a violation of our liberties. And so I take the question and I ask them, what has the Patriot Act done to you personally? Have you been bothered by the Patriot Act? And not one person to date has said yes. And so the type of people that they're looking at, you know, if you're a private citizen and you obey the law and you do everything you're supposed to do, but you suddenly start gathering things like C4, or you start gathering diesel fuel and fertilizer, they're going to start watching what you're doing, I guarantee you, because that's what the Patriot Act is supposed to do, as I understand it. So would I vote for those things? I'd have to look at them in depth and see, because I'm not familiar at this point in time just exactly what was voted on last month. They put them back in, and they were things that that were in the law to begin with.
Can I follow up with a bit of a and obviously this is going to be you clearly respond to what I tell you. So one of the three provisions is Section 206 of the Patriot Act, and it provides for roving wiretap surveillance of targets who try to thwart Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act surveillance, FISA. Without such roving wiretap authority, investigators would be forced to seek a new court order each time they need to change the location, phone, or computer that needs to be monitored. The second provision was Section 215, which allows the FBI to apply to the FISA court to issue orders granting the government access to any tangible items in foreign intelligence, international terrorism, and clandestine intelligence cases. The third is Section 6001 of the Intelligence Reform and Terrorist Prevention Act of 2004, which closes a loophole that could allow individual terrorists not affiliated with specific organizations to slip through the cracks of FISA surveillance. And so those were the three, summaries of the three provisions. And, does that allow you to further evaluate
well,
that at
the time? Well, it sounds to me like that if you're a terrorist, then you'd be objecting to them violently. That sounds to me like what that means. I can tell you that I was invited into the FBI Citizens Academy, and the FBI Citizens Academy is an outreach to community leaders and so forth, and went to Cleveland for 8 weeks, and we took courses up there. And one of the classes that we took was about wiretaps. And I have to tell you that this isn't as easy as you think it is. The federal judges that hand out these warrants also put restrictions on what they can do with the wiretap. Like, there's a restriction that says that as soon as the clock hits something like 36 seconds, they have to turn the wiretap off for 2 minutes. Okay? And so what the FBI told us, they said, well, we get all set up and we got this guy, and all the bad guys know this law and know this premise. All they get on is they start talking about the baseball game or their girlfriend or some other thing, and as soon as it hits 36 seconds, they know they got to turn the wiretap off, and that's when they do their business. And that's one of the reasons why they did the roving wiretap, to try to get around that those judges' rules, because the crooks know what's going on. And so, believe me, they're not doing this on private citizens. They're doing this on people that they suspect and have good evidence that they're about to create terrorist activities. And if you ask me, that's really pretty much what I was doing in the military. Nobody was blowing things up at that time, but we had to worry about whether the Russians were going to send a missile or whether they were going to you know, whether we had submarines inside New York Harbor or San Francisco Harbor, that sort of thing. So, you know, it's a hot button issue, believe me. And
absolutely.
Basically, on the surface, it does interfere with personal liberties. And so you have to recognize that. And the people that are really being bothered by this are really people who have malintent for American citizens.
Alrighty. Follow-up question.
Go ahead, Greg. Quick.
Yeah, a quick follow-up question, and this is a hypothetical. Would you be in favor, Patriot Act aside, would you ever vote for legislation similar like the Patriot Act if you found that it circumvented our constitutional rights in order to fight against terrorism or, you know, homeland security? Is that a clear question? So I'm just kind of creating this question as we're talking here, so I want to make sure that that's clear.
Well, I mean, you know, that covers a lot of territory. And I think that's a pretty broad way to look at it. I'm not sure that the laws are written like that. I don't think that a law should have all-encompassing. I think there should be pretty some specifics built into it so that you can identify. Because not every situation is going to be the same. Certainly, that particular thing might apply in one area, and then it might do terrible damage in another. So I think that you'd have to look at it individually and decide and try to keep it within the Constitution, as far as I'm concerned. That's really what I'm all about. I'd like to see everything be by the Constitution, but I also understand that the people that are doing this are not necessarily American citizens. As far as I'm concerned, they're fair game.
All righty. Thanks for that. Doc, we're going to play another little piece. Here is something that I doubt a lot of people are aware of that Dr. Price points out, I believe, in his book as well as in his video regarding the Cadillac of Congress health care.
Either. I encourage every American to read about this health care plan and to stand up and force Congress to put on the brakes and listen to us, something they have not done for a long, long time. With this web page that introduces this book to America, there is a link for Americans to sign up to participate in a grassroots movement to force Congress to take the same health care they are pushing on the rest of us. Now, in French antiquity, there's an old fable that tells the story of a princess, whereupon being told that the peasants have no bread, she said, "Well, then let them eat cake." Well, where would they get the cake if they didn't even have bread? This story parallels the hubris of our own government officials. They have purposely exempted themselves from our health care plan. Now, this smacks of the old Russian Politburo. The government sets themselves up with a Cadillac health care plan while the rest of us suffer with an envelope that has health care written on the outside and there's virtually nothing on the inside. Now, I propose that we set up a national referendum that the people of America vote on to force Congress to use the same health care they provide for us. The people of America have basically forgotten that America is a democracy first and a representative republic second. The Constitution leaves the people a safety valve to put the brakes on a runaway government, and I intend to initiate that very safety valve. Through referendum, we can force Congress to forfeit their Cadillac plan and take the same one they give us. Better yet, perhaps we should force them onto Medicare. This referendum can be written in a way that Congress cannot overturn it and the courts cannot review it. This will take a lot of work and dedication, but this is not an unknown enterprise to the American people. Now, I'm building an army in this war on medicine, and I intend to make sure that Americans get the very best health care that we can and stop this madness at the...
All righty. Well, I think people are aware of this. Doc, let me kind of follow up with this. This is true, is that if Obamacare basically does not cover members of federal government?
Yeah, it does not.
Wow. All righty, that's going to do it. On behalf of C. Robert Jones, Conservative Hour, I see GGT in the chat room. Join us for prime time at 11:30, GGT. Will you please post the link in the chat room there? We close the show. On behalf of C. Robert Jones, this is Cool Mike. saying thank you. Join tomorrow. Well, hopefully he'll have power again.
Sometimes the feeling is right. You fall in love for the first time. Heartbeat and kisses so sweet. Summertime love in the moonlight. I see you.